Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, hello, my habibis and habibtis. Welcome to this very special episode of Jin's Podcast, the very first podcast that tackles love, feminism, gender, and sexualities for the Arabs and or Muslims of this world. In the heart of the Middle East, dance has always been more than just an art form. It has been an act of communication, resistance, and identity. Since the mid-19th century, the streets of Cairo whispered tales of the captivating Rawazi dancers. In Arabic, the terms Rawazi, the one who conquer, suggesting the sheer power of these dancers to captivate and conquer the very souls of their audience. Contrary to popular misconceptions, these weren't just women indulging in sensuous moves, they were also men. The Alme, or wise and literate woman, literally, stepped in as a substitute when the Rawazi faced legal bans in 1834. These were dancers of intellect and grace, embodying both the elegance and defiance of a culture in flux. But when women were barred from dancing in certain public arenas, the tradition found a way to persevere. Enter the Khawal, a young man wearing feminine attire, taking center stage and keeping the spirit of the dance alive in public events ranging from weddings to circumcisions. It echoes back to 18th century Turkey, where the Koshek dancers, young men draped in vibrant outfits, filled the air with music, dance, and acrobatics, often blurring the gender lines with their attire and makeup. The dance was never just about the movement. It was about questioning norms, challenging social expectations, and embracing one's true self. In the realm of gender studies, few voices resonate as profoundly as Judith Butler's. Her groundbreaking concept of performativity suggests that gender isn't something we are, but rather something we do repeatedly through our actions and expressions. It's a continuous performance. So when we examine the intricate dance of Arab queer folks, this theory takes on a vivid form. Their artistic expressions, interwoven with both masculine and feminine threads, present a tapestry of gender fluidity that challenges the rigid dichotomies of male and female. In their dance, we witness not just the harmony of two gendered words, but also a declaration. Gender, like art, isn't fixed or static. It's an ongoing act, an evolving story, a dance in itself. This is why it's my absolute pleasure to introduce you to three individuals who embody this spirit and have channeled the energy of those who danced before them. Anthony Nakhle, Khansa, and the Darvish. From dancing on heels to voguing in the ballroom scene, each one of them have succeeded in transcending gender dynamics to simply offer their own extraordinary artistry. My dears, ahlan bikum on Jin's Podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for this invitation.
أهلين فيك شكرا كتير للدعوة.
So Khansa, the first thing I have to say about you is that you're mesmerizing. You have this hypnotic aura around you that makes you shine in the darkness. Very elegant, very graceful. You're a multifaceted artist using vocals, belly dancing, recorded music, performance to create a timeless moment. What's your art about?
Just to clarify, as singer, songwriter, dancer, choreographer, and music producer, I use all these mediums to basically put out a work that's kind of a reflection of what the ultimate universe I want to live in looks like. And it's basically, I created this connection with all these mediums to be able to build this world that I feel safe in, and a world that really I feel so free. I can get to do whatever I want. I get away with a lot of things I cannot express, or behaviors I cannot go about in real life with whether family, friends, acquaintances, society. I use all of this to create a universe that I invite people to take part in and get to see what it's like, what it looks like, what it feels like, listen to the things I have to say, look at my dancing, what the dancing has to say. And it really comes from a feeling beyond anything else. You know, it's not like I'm trying to tell you something. It's just I'm inviting you to this world that just existed and that I'm creating. And every single thing I learn in my life, every single thing I acquire as a skill, as a text, as a writing, as music, whatever it is, I have to put it in this world and turn it into something. Communicated with you as an audience, as a guest as well, basically giving you a piece of the alternative persona that I like, that I feel good about, that I enjoy embodying.
You named yourself after Al-Khamsa, who's a 7th century female poet, one of the most influential of the pre-Islamic and early Islamic Arabian Peninsula. When you're performing, you're often wearing delicate feminine outfits, makeup, high heels. So why is it so important to break the stereotypes of classical and traditional Middle Eastern values regarding masculinity?
To me, it's like it wasn't my aim to sit down and break those stereotypes. It's like something that the media has analyzed. To me, it was just focusing on what's real, because to me, it felt so real. It felt so powerful. It felt like it's something that we were not allowed to do. To me, it's beyond just the heels and becoming a woman, because I feel when I'm on stage, I can live that masculinity. I can live that feminine side of me. I can push it to different places. And what I like about Al-Khamsa is because she was the queen of mourning, you know, and she was a feminist as well. And she was constantly lamenting. And my work is, you see that a lot in Black. So this is religious reference as well, because I come from a Shiite conservative community. That this is our color, basically. And our identity is based on mourning and like Shahada, you know, like the concept of sacrificing your life, martyr. The concept of martyr is to sacrifice your life for the cause that you strongly believe in. And to me, it's all about the love and the affection and the intimacy that's something I strongly believe in. And there's, you see that in my outfit, you know, where I become that softness and tenderness that the lover, to get closer to the lover I'm targeting or the person I'm talking to. At the same time, you know, just I feel so dominant and powerful and present that my body shifts all of a sudden, you know, and everything that I've know just comes there to play its role, you know, be it the belly dancing, be it the voice, whatever it takes so that I can really morph into that being, and really get as close as possible to the feeling that it's probably difficult to explain or express, so just turn into that, you know. And hence the black and the different attires, you know, there's so much that's going on there, and it's all it all has a purpose, and it all comes from that place.
Yeah, it seems like drag queens and kings perform gender to exaggerate the features of the masculine or the feminine, but it feels like you want to perform gender by mixing them together perfectly.
It's from a different dimension. It's like from a dimension, and it's like, it feels to me, it's more powerful than just a man and a woman. It's in between. It's something that's where everything is possible, where you're literally in direct contact with your power, inner identity, you know, the real you, the you that you've been pushed away from, the you that you've been distracted away from, you've been, so that you kind of a get back to what was I supposed to be? What was I supposed to look like? What was I supposed to be? You know, because we always say this thing, like, I feel from inside, like I'm like this person. I feel from inside. I feel. So to me, it's like, yes, let that feeling out and see where it takes you. And everything I have to say, if it sits right, if it feels real, if it makes me feel something, then it's real. Then I have to put it out, you know, then I have to give it its voice, its space. And that's what the performance is about. So I'm like kind of a, to me, it's not that I want to become different genders. It's, to me, it's basically putting out my real identity, my real gender, giving it a voice, giving it a platform to exist. And that's what Khansa is about.
I was wondering whether all belly dances were the same across the Arab world, from Egypt to Lebanon, from Turkey to Jordan, because you come from a long tradition of gender non-conforming belly dances in the region, aren't you? You have the Zenne and the Koshak in Turkey, the Khawal in Egypt.
This form of dance, it's basically dance of existence. You know, we're talking about beyond just the woman, the female body, beyond just the male body. It's literally a preparation, a ritual, transform that's supposed to channel this divine energy that just embodies this body and becomes part of it, and it makes you feel all those feelings. You know, we're talking about, it's like if the man does belly dance, it's like they're giving birth. You know, it was used as a form of giving birth as well, a dance for the gods to encourage fertility and to give life. I mean, now it took so many different forms, and it's like it's very mainly cabaret oriented. Very fascinating. You know, I went to Egypt, I attended the festival there, and it was the first time I see the culture, you know, the modern world of how they, their perception to it. You know, okay, the dancer has a specific attire, she goes on stage and she competes to become recognized, and then she starts doing all these weddings and performances. You know, it's like I'm using this format to take it to a different place because it just fits with my world in that sense. You know, I'm not aiming to go and dance at a wedding. I might have done it once in my life for a friend, but like it's not my aim to go and start giving it. Just like, you know, to me, it's like I really want it to be something very sacred that you come and watch it and experience it in a specific context, rather than just because it's quite social dance, you know. And to me, it's like it's beyond that, you know. There's a lot that's going on there. There's philosophy, there's music, there's technique, there's history, there are so many themes, there's so many layers to it. And I think you really need to go through all of that so that you truly understand when I say I cannot just go up and do this for you without me going and sitting down with myself, understanding what I need to provide you with so that I can stand and give you that performance that you asked me for. You know what I mean?
I'm actually, as a movie director, currently working with the brilliant Lebanese director Dan Abder on my next movie. She's won international attention with her movie Washa, a film that explores the perspective of a Syrian migrant worker in Beirut who just wants to break free and who's played by you. So this character goes up on top of a crane and the dreamy scenes turns into a very sensual, queer aerial dance. So what story did you want to tell the world in this short movie?
The thing that I'd always like to project to the audience is that moment of crossing the bridge, putting away all the fear, all the insecurities, and just climbing on the top. To me, the sky is freedom and represents freedom, and it made sense for this. Just take a moment alone and realize the importance of freedom and how beautiful it is. And we really underestimate the word freedom and what it means. You know, it's just dancing in the sky is just a visual representation of what it could feel like when it comes to finding your own freedom. You know, like this guy, if he slips, he dies. You know, it's death right there. But then he couldn't care less. He was just, freedom made him look the most beautiful creature in the world. And that was the most important part of it. And And actually, it was a turning point for me, that film, because when I actually climbed all the way up to Ukraine, and when I did this performance, it made sense to me, you know, like it made a lot of sense to me. What I felt there, I think a lot of people who've seen the film felt it, and that's why the film did a good job in that sense.
Yeah, and also your character prays at the end, alone in the clouds, after the Muezzin call to prayer. So why is it so important to remember that queer people can be spiritual or religious?
Spirituality and religion, I find them very, like, prayer is a form of dance. You know, he was still dancing. His dance was not over. It's just it had a different purpose. Because dance is a prayer, is a spiritual moment as well. So I didn't... The point is, there's no difference between both. You know, probably the purpose is different, the intention is different, but they have the same power and they have the same, and they're united together because that what he did was a prayer. And then when he moved and did this choreography that is part of his praying rituals is also a dance performance. And, you know, when we were raised to pray and worship God, you know, we're worshiping a powerful energy that we cannot see but we believe in. So there's not a lot of big difference between both. And I always feel closer to my God through dance, through movement, and through my own ways of praying.
I enjoyed watching the clip of your song Khaif, which is an interpretation of Mohamed Abdelwahab's song خايف أقول في قلبي, I'm afraid to say what's in my heart. So there's a sensual imagery with the combination of the masculine and the feminine, and all of that in a scene we can all relate to, which is the family applauding an innocent child performing in public. We don't care which gender the child is. So what message did you want to convey with خايف?
خايف was just an invitation to my world. It was me starting somewhere, you know, where I was like, this is my story, let me introduce myself. It was just showing this family dynamic, this whole double standard issue that we experience as queer Arab individuals when it comes to exposing who we are or when it comes to choosing to be who we are. It's a very personal story, but then I thought it would be it's nice always to start this conversation, you know, and it made sense to be with the music, with the phase I was at that point in my life. And it was like I wanted to just be out there as an artist somewhere, you know, like, and I thought this would be a good start. And I went into a roller coaster because of it. So it was an interesting beginning. Obviously, my message was more of an invitation, was just showcasing this situation that takes place in every single household, not just in the Arab world, but even outside, you know, especially when you live within a family or community that is conservative, semi-conservative, just have these standards when it comes to their concerns regarding their children becoming queer this difference, these feelings, you know, they can either make you or break you, you know. And I think that every single person should take all of this and turn it into something. Gets them close to themselves and themselves only, you know. I reach a point where I don't need that validation anymore, you know. I don't need that. I don't, like, it's a very exhausting fight. It's more of, I chose to channel it in a different way. That makes me happy, makes me feel great, makes me feel protected, safe, sexy. But for those who are still struggling and fighting and they find it very difficult to cross that bridge, their time will come. And I really hope they are surrounded by the right people. When you're queer, you're different, you're powerful, you're closer to freedom, you see things different from the world, you come from a different dimension, and I think they have to really value that, put aside all their egos and look at it from a different perspective, channel it into something else, something that can take them to an upper stage, something that can to aim high, just like this character from the film did, and to get to that freedom that they want, and do whatever it takes. Don't be afraid of all the experiences they have to go through.
Darvish, how did you become a belly dancer?
Well, there's a lot to unpack here. First and foremost, hello everyone, and glad you tuned in to listen to us. My name is The Darvish. I'm a Syrian human, but also living in Berlin since 2016. I'm a dancer, performance artist and event organizer, and some would say activist. I do identify as non-binary, so my pronouns are he, him, they, them. It's a very interesting question, actually, because when I did move to Berlin, I never had ever imagined that I would be up on stage and performing and dancing and presenting what I'm presenting right now, especially when it comes to gender, or especially when it comes to, you know, culture as well. I moved here for the purpose of studying and pleasing my parents, of course, as many of us do. And I stumbled upon performance art during my nights out with friends. I stumbled upon meeting other queer people, other expressive personalities, and especially the drag art bubble. I was always drawn to drag in all of its form since I was back in Syria. For me to see it very up close, it definitely inspired me. And that's how I started, you know, playing with the idea of going up on stage and thinking, I could also present whatever I want to present, because drag is an endless, you know, umbrella of art that you could bring. I was also dreamt of being a dancer, but never really thought this would happen back in Syria, because we do not have this culture of supporting the art, especially if you want to make a career out of dance or out of, I don't know, painting or music. So it was always just a dream, but here it got real.
Berlin is well known for being a safer place for queer people, especially refugees, but do you really feel seen at the intersection of all your identities, not just as an Arab, not just as a queer person, not just as a performer?
I, at first, did not think it would be welcome. And in many ways, it wasn't. That's why I worked twice as hard to change that narrative. And I worked really my ass off to present myself in all of those communities and in all of those subcultures the way I want to be seen and visible. And not only myself, but also my community and other queer Arabs and trans and non-binary people coming from the Swana region. Because when I started dancing, I immediately understood the responsibility that I have postponed upon myself and gladly accepted of how the narrative of queer refugees is in Europe and how to change it, like ways of presenting another perspective for people to see it from a different angle.
Yeah, I've seen you perform combining the five elements of Vogue with belly dancing. Has dance helped you own your identity as an Arab queer person and allowed you to entirely perform your gender?
100%. Listen, without dance, I wouldn't be the person I am today. And without the difference of cultures that I personally grew up in Berlin, I wouldn't be the person I am today. Like, I started, of course, with thinking of it as just a hobby, with belly dancing and presenting, you know, this side of culture that I grew up in and expressing myself in that way. allowed me to really connect to my heritage and allowed me to think twice about me as an Arab or as Syrian. I really came to peace with a lot of things that I completely rejected. And then when I started also learning voguing and going to like the safe spaces of the communities, I was actually part of the first project that calls for safe spaces for refugees and immigrants to come and learn voguing and create a community. It was called Future V. In that room, I felt the confidence within me. I felt the connection to my queerness and the connection to who I am as a person and to my feminine side even more and more, because I was able to walk in heels freely. I was able to learn the history. It was a lot of processing and sitting with myself and really dissecting who I am as a person with the different categories, of course, like from the runway to Vogue Femme to there's so many, even Sex Siren. I was like, I never saw myself like a hairy person with a beard walking down the runway being praised for the sexiness that is this, you know, presentation. So it brings me a lot of joy actually to be part of this movement and the dance that it is.
It's interesting also, like, as a non-binary person, what is your relationship with your own hair? Could we say it's kind of an element of your performance too?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, as Mama Ru said, we're all naked and the rest is drag. And I do think with me, the connection that I felt through dance, through my gender, it evolved gradually. Like, I started with trying out with costumes or outfits that are only to one gender, but then I realized that I'm not comfortable with it. And that's how it kind of developed. I absolutely love my appearance and who I am as a person. And I learned also that it's not necessarily one or the other. I'm not either or a male or a female. I have both sides, and I have nurtured both sides, the femininity and the masculinity within me, and I can choose on the daily average or in my performances how I want to present myself. And the fact that I keep my beard or keep my chest bare during my performances, and I do not necessarily cover my upper body most of the time, is because I want to present this masculinity and the femininity with my outfits, you know. So I want to have this balance. I want to like, for example, when I wear my fizz, it does represent in our culture my tarbush. It represents in our culture the hierarchy and the masculinity. And when I'm wearing it, I'm trying to break all of that. That's why I had it as my signature look, let's say.
You go by the name the Darvish, which is obviously a reference to Sufi dancers. You perform with an outfit that is very typical and traditional of your Arab culture with the fizz, the tarbush. Sometimes between two gracious moves, you break into a zaruta or ululation. Actually, can you make one real quick so that people hear what it is? Perfect one. So do you think art, dance, fashion and body movements can redefine queerness outside of the Western canvas?
It's really that. It's the embodiment of these two energies that I hold within myself, you know? That's why I say representing not only the feminine or the masculine, but also combining those two. As I mentioned before, it took me a while to accept my Arabness, to process and take it as part of me that I'm proud of to present, because it's not easy. Like, I lived my whole life being rejected and did not want to associate myself with this community anymore. The minute I left Syria, I was like, okay, bye, tschüss, ciao, salam. But it allowed me definitely to reconnect furthermore. And it's a trauma from what we have lived throughout our lives. And hopefully step by step, we're able to change that and connect with who we are as Arabs, as queers, as trans and gender nonconforming. And through art, of course, that's my way, at least. I find it's the fastest to heal some traumas.
You also created a party named Yalla Hafla, which means let's party in Arabic. Can you tell us a bit more about how you intend to celebrate both your queerness and your Arabness?
I am indeed the co-organizer, co-founder of Yalla Hafla and Queens Against Borders. Those two events in Berlin and in Europe, I would say, do call for more visibility when it comes to queer Arab refugees and a more coexistence within the art scene of Berlin and the Arab world, let's say. To answer your question, Yalla Hafla means a lot to me because this is first event that I really brought all my passion into it, like my organizing skills, my artistic sides, my culture and my ideology. And I put it all in this little baby that was 5 years ago. And now this baby grew, of course, with the help of my co-organizer, drag artist Judy La Divina. We really did, I dare to say, shape the Arabic community here a little bit, because the fact that there is humans from all around the world, but especially Jews and Arabs and Palestinians and Syrians and all like the MENA Suana region coming to this event and caring nothing but what is happening in that room and celebrating and dancing together, and me seeing that in front of my own eyes, it brings me so much joy and hope that there is ways to coexist and celebrate each other.
Anthony, you're a young dancer from Lebanon. You dance classical and contemporary, but also in heels. You challenge gender norms by dancing in heels, which is not only original, but also quite dangerous in a society where heels are not for boys. It's funny because it was Yanis Marshall, a French gay guy with Arab heritage, who popularized this dance for men in the world. So why is it so important to dance in heels as a man?
To begin with, it's important for me to dance in general, with or without heels. Wearing heels at first, or when I started to train in heels with Yanis Marshall, I didn't know, or I didn't quite realize the message behind the whole dancing in heels as a Lebanese guy, so on and so on. So I was just doing it because it was feeling good and it was something I always dreamt of doing, actually. But slowly, when I started to see the reaction from my friends in Lebanon and the dancers around in the Middle East and so on, it was then I slowly started to realize the image that I needed to hold up for a certain moment because of my background. And for me, it's totally normal. It doesn't say so much. But I guess I could totally understand how big of a deal it could be, like, to some.
I again, like, not stress about the message behind it. I just go with how it feels at the moment right now. Like, I totally feel like it sits well in my body, and I feel how it, and I like how it makes me feel, so I go for it. I discovered new ways to to know my body and to like acknowledge how it works or where it needs to be positioned and so on. And this was interesting to go on wearing the heels. When I started wearing heels or practicing in high heels, it totally went in this sense, like sensual, sexual, touchy, da-da-da, so on and so on. And then when I slowly transitioned into my contemporary training with Beirut Contemporary Ballet and to create, so then when I put my high heels on, my attempt to dance and to move was, some might call it sensual, but for me it was just a different type of thinking of just like maybe just moving around space. It didn't, or some might perceive it as sexual, but for me it switched. At the beginning it was that, but then it went more into shapes, using the space, using the forms, so on and so on.
Has dance been a shelter for you and a means of expressing your multiple identities?
At some point for me, life got very confusing, or still gets confusing at certain points and certain situations. And for me, I found dancing is my way out of confusion or of this confusion. But most of the times, I think this creation also comes from calmness and from a good mental space. It doesn't necessarily have to be traumatic or coming out of this confusion and so on. But these are just inputs that we are receiving. But mainly, it also the creation comes from being calm.
Do you think dance and queerness are intrinsically linked?
I would like to believe that there is queerness in every creature. So then it reflects itself through dance, but it's more available in dancing, I guess, because one is more exposed to fully experiencing one's emotions or whatever this person's feelings are. Like artists or dancers tend to experience that a little bit more deeply or a little bit more intensely. I think it's the only way for one to actually experience his own, like, his own skin.
Do you manage to incorporate Arab dance movements, or more specifically the influence of your Lebanese culture, into your choreography?
I never thought of it this way. I never put a separation between the movement and the feeling and my Arabness and queerness with this. And like in my thought process, whenever I was dancing, this never came to my mind. Whenever I was executing a dance style, let's say, I was doing it the way it was supposed to be done. And in some ways, this queerness would come out and would pop out. And I was pointed out by it, like people were like, hey, you need to stop, let's say, doing like being queer and so on in this dance style. And then through your movement or within the range of motion that you're doing, this, however you present or you showcase that movement, then it's a different story than if you need it to be a little bit more with the hip and a shoulder for it to look a little bit more sensual, then you go for it. But if not, then you're just doing the movement. It doesn't involve any queerness, any Arabness, any this, any that. It's just pure moving.
Article 534 of the Lebanese Penal Code prohibits sexual relations contrary to the laws of nature, which means homosexual acts. But despite the daily violence against queer people, there's also an incredible nightlife with drag scenes and so on. Is there like a ballroom scene in Lebanon?
But this has been like a huge dilemma, like what the law is and what the people are doing. And I think this, like what you had just said about Lebanon being the haven for other queer people coming from the Middle East, they're hosting balls and they do great events, and they recently hosted judges from like from important places in the Vogue scene. So, and it's quite loud, which is beautiful. I think they are
already doing it. Like, I haven't been in Lebanon for almost 2 years and a half now. And I feel like in these 2 years and a half, the queer community has been pushing boundaries like no other, which is something amazing to see. And I think they are literally like doing what needs to be done firsthand, because they are the ones receiving the hardships and the problems that they are going through, and they are figuring it out firsthand, like what to do. So drag queens who are doing their art openly, they're performing, they're doing all these shows, whether it was from artists that are being invited to perform in certain venues, like all of this, like what the artists in Lebanon are doing at the moment, like I think it's already in a good way.
Okay, we will wrap this up, but first, in each episode of Gens, we deconstruct together a myth or a lie that I have been told or that I have often heard of. One day in a nightclub, there was a show of men dancing on heels, and I overheard a white guy watching this show who said to his friend, "I mean, a real man dancing on high heels? I can't even stand a guy who's doing ballet. Some things can't be just changed like that. Having a beard and a muscular body on stilettos is hideous." What would you have answered if you were me?
I would have asked yourself, why does this make you feel uncomfortable? Why do you find this? You know, ask him questions, because that's the best way of it. Because I know for a fact that he will not give me a single valid answer, which is going to tell me one thing, that it's all bullshit and it all comes from a place of hate. All these amazing pirouettes, like these incredible athletes who do these massive pirouettes and land perfectly on the floor. You know, the guy thinks it's easy to do that. He probably is not aware of that. But if he, appreciation takes time, you know, and if he needs to take time, take time. But come to me and tell me that, I will ask him this question. I'll tell him why and what, why do you feel uncomfortable when you say that?
I look at this person and I would say, what a pity it is to have a mind like yours, because it's ridiculous, honestly, to even think that just looking at someone else's appearance, you would know their life and you would know things. And to me, this closed-mindedness, which I escaped from initially, does irritate me. But again, I always say that I'm living my own life, and I'm the most happy when I am presenting what I am for real. Therefore, this other person's opinion does not affect me, and it just can stay with him. It's not hurting me. It's just hurting himself, because he's not able to see the beauty. He's not able to see the realness. He's not able to see. He does not want to see and does not want to, you know, comprehend that diversity and difference is what will bring us steps forward. And someone's mentality like that just brings us backwards. What a pity, Gar. What a pity.
I would have smiled, I would have looked at him, I would have thought a little bit, and then probably I would walk away or laugh. Like, from where do you want me to start? Do I want to start? This is the question then I ask myself if I was ever faced in situations like this. And sometimes you pick your fights and sometimes you don't, and you let them fight themselves.
Habibis, thanks a lot for this inspiring discussion.
Thank you for this, Jamal. It's been a lovely conversation.
My pleasure. Thank
you. Remember, be it on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, Google Podcasts, or else, don't forget to subscribe to Jean's Podcast account and to leave your questions and comments. Go subscribe to Jean's Podcast on Instagram at JINS_podcast. Don't hesitate to share around every time you listen to an episode, because you should always remember that someone, somewhere, somewhat needs a new light shed on Islam, gender identity, sexualities, Arab origins, or anything that can be prone to oppression. So please do your part and pass the word around.
Treat mom to healthy, glowing skin with Osea's limited edition skincare sets. Osea has been making clean, seaweed-infused products for nearly 30 years. Their Golden Glow body set includes 3 clinically proven bestsellers for smooth, glowing skin, while the Glow and Go facial set provides spa-level results at home. Both sets come in giftable boxes with savings up to $48 and free shipping for a limited time. For 10% off your first order site-wide, go to oseamalibu.com and use code MOM.